everyone, welcome to this week's Live Support Ops Hangout. I'm your host, Chase Clemens. The entire crew is back this week, so we're super excited for that. Carolyn was just jet-setting from somewhere, so if she, like, passes out during the show, it's okay. We're just going to keep going. But yeah, how was the vacation?
It was wonderful. Thank you so much for asking.
I saw I think it was on Instagram or something, where it was bottles, huge bottles of red wine for, like, $1.50.
Yes. Lisbon, Portugal, and the wine prices were fantastic.
At that point, just don't even bother, like, drinking water.
Yeah, it was insane. My friend and I drank a lot of wine.
Oh, and then next up, Chase Livingston, who is always looking his dapper self. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks.
And then last but certainly not least, although the guy that is the cause of most of our reasons for starting late, Jeff Vinson, who said he was out walking Sherman today, which is a good excuse.
It is 85 degrees here today.
Oh, wow, you can beat us.
So, who knows? That was what the weather said. I didn't actually check. But it is nice. Let's put it this way. It is nice here, and it feels like about 2 weeks ago we had snow. So I will spend a little bit of extra time just walking around enjoying warm air.
It's okay. Give it 2 weeks, and you'll have more snow.
The chances are pretty good.
Oh, all right. So this week, we're looking at something. It caught my eye. There's a great article out by Sarah Chambers. I'll link it up in the show notes. But she was talking about, the bulk of the article was talking about reasons why we should be doing support on Twitter and offering that as an actual support channel for everybody. And there was one line in there that really caught my eye. And she said that lowering the barrier to interaction means that you can elevate your customer's experience one tweet at a time. At the end of the day, customer support is only about making the road to success as easy as possible for the customer. And that phrase there, lowering the barrier to interaction, really caught my eye. We talk about ways to make it easy on the customer to get in touch with us. And I think Buffer does probably one of the best jobs out there, because it's literally like, you need help, here's the email address. All you got to do is send an email, which is really cool. So we're looking at, for this show, ways that we can be lowering that barrier to interaction with our customers and how low we can make that bar without it becoming detrimental to either side. So let's start with Carolyn on this one, since I called them out a little bit. Buffer's always been famous for making it easy, right? I mean, there's no real huge help site you have to go through and navigate through. There's no phone tree to navigate through. It's literally, you need help, here's the email address, just email us. So what's the thinking behind stripping all that away and just making it an email address?
First of all, thank you. That's a lovely compliment. Yeah, that's just kind of always been the way it was even before I came on board. Joel has been so enthusiastic about making it really easy for people to get in touch. I think as sort of the company matured and the team grew and stuff, we still felt like there's a lot of ways to do support well, and great documentation is one of them. But there's still always going to be people who would rather talk to a human, and so we wanted to make that as easy as possible. So yeah, everybody on this panel, I think, makes it super easy. The fact that you can hit reply to any email, or everywhere all over the app and the FAQ and everything, there's like, in case you need help, here's how to get in touch.
Yeah, and you bring up a cool point there, or a good point, as far as like how well that scales as the team grows, as the customer base goes. Again, we turned to Chase Livingston because Automatic is on the far end of that scale? Is that a word? Far end of that scale, whatever it is. And they do a really good job with it. I mean, you go through, okay, so Automatic, WordPress.com has a fairly extensive knowledge base there for searching. But y'all really don't make it tough to get in touch with you. I mean, we were talking before the show, Chase, about how you're doing Jetpack support. If I have a question about Jetpack, I can tweet at y'all and you'll get me an answer. So do you think, you know, having that big of a customer base, it's still okay to offer really easy ways to get in touch?
I mean, for us, it works. And so I think that's, you know, a testament to how, you know, we feel about it. You know, we feel that it's, you know, first and foremost, it's important for our customers to be able to get in touch with us in the easiest way possible. And so, you know, we offer, like I said, you know, Jetpack does some Twitter support. Obviously, there's some cases where it's a lot easier to take that to email just because of some, you know, complex debugging or investigation that we might have to do on your site. But oftentimes, you know, we can point you to a link or something like that to answer your question, which is kind of the beauty of Twitter support, to be able to just give those quick replies that, you know, answer your question without a lot of back and forth like an email might have. And then on WordPress.com, you know, we also offer kind of similar way to Jetpack. We, you know, we'll give you that quick answer if we can get it, or, you know, maybe try to get you to switch over to email or generate a ticket for you automatically if it's something that needs a little more investigation and, you know, is a little more involved than 140 characters allows. So yeah, it's worked well for us, is working well for us. And I hope that, you know, the users notice that and enjoy that.
Yeah, and then we've got Wistia, who, you know, Jeff is famous for being, what's the phrase, being as intensely human as possible when it's called for. So when it comes to you looking at support channels that Wistia is going to offer, are you thinking about that kind of barrier to entry there? Like, do I need a Twitter account to get in touch? Do I need an email address to get in touch? Like, does that factor into which support channels you choose to support?
I think the point around you need to be where your customers are is a really good one. Sarah makes that point in the article, and I think you made that point a little bit earlier, Chase. But it is about a couple of things. One, the word customers in that sentence is pretty important. So you need to know where your customers are, not where everybody who wants to talk about your product might be. In terms of providing support. So what I mean by that is long time ago, we had a phone number on our website, which was great when we had one customer and there were five people landing on the website every day, and we wanted a chance to talk to all of them and get all of their feedback. Every last bit of it was super important. If we did it today, we would have such a volume that we couldn't handle any of our actual customers. Right, and one of my teammates, Ezra, put it really well earlier today, which was this was kind of in regards more to free customer support than to channel, but anything that prevents so let's say a customer writes in and a paying customer writes in and a free customer writes in. Every second that the paying customer waits while you answer the free customer's email is like a tax that they're paying, right? They're paying to keep the lights on and keep the servers running and all of that stuff. And yet they're waiting, right, for a response. So you need to pick the channel where you can actually help the customer and that you're not just inviting conversations that don't necessarily provide any value on either side. So to answer your question directly, like we do consider we would say that we provide support over Twitter. I'm not really sure what WooThemes is accomplishing just by closing a support Twitter account. Like, people are just going to ask the normal WooThemes handle their questions. Like, the questions don't go away. But I think to Chase Livingston's point, what you do with the question next is kind of the challenging part. Because if you're trying to provide technical support over Twitter, you're going to spend an awful lot of your time spinning your wheels. Not a great answer, I guess. Like just about everything else, this feels like it kind of depends on the issues that you run into that your platform normally has to deal with.
I think that's going to be the new motto of the show. It depends.
Well, but I mean, we kind of have to talk through each scenario, because I don't want anyone listening to whatever they recommend must work for me, when all of our customers are different. I mean, Chase Livingston, his product used to be squarely focused on developers. And the type of support that they need, the type of support that that platform provides, is probably a little bit different than what a totally self-contained platform like a Basecamp provides. Your channels are going to have to take that into account, I think.
Yeah, and that's one of those, just to kind of give you an idea of what Basecamp does. Phone, email, Twitter, those are kind of the official, quote-unquote, official channels as far as support goes. But we still, we've got a Facebook page and occasionally get questions on Facebook. And if we ignored those, then it's like you're ignoring a customer in front of anybody that's a customer or a potential customer. So it's one of those where you've got to be in the places that your customers are, like Jeff mentioned. Other than that, we do tend to make it pretty easy. Just as kind of an A-B test kind of scenario, when we first launched, not when we first launched, but when we're getting the help site up and running, when you went to any kind of support page inside of Basecamp, we would drop you on basecamp.com/help. And I'll put these in the show notes so you can check them out. That help page was structured where you were not forced to look through all of the documentation first, but it was definitely encouraged because we put the contact links down at the bottom. That way you would at least have to scroll to the bottom. And so we did that for a while. It was fine. And then we said, well, what if we really make it easy just to kind of take a buffer approach and just, if somebody wants to get in touch with us, they can right up front. If they want to look at documentation, that's fine. If they want to, reach out on Twitter, that's fine. But let's make it super easy to get in touch with us. So that's when we set up the basecamp.com/support page, which is very prominently, there's a big text box there where you can send us a ticket. You can still check out the other stuff, but sending us a ticket is kind of the main goal of that page, if you want to call it that. And we didn't really see that big of an increase as far as people contacting us. So the help site itself wasn't really filtering out people from contacting us. It was, if anything, just making them scroll to the bottom of the page to click on something. Again, your attraction may vary, it depends, and all that kind of clauses in there, but for us, making it super easy to get in touch with us didn't increase our load very much.
That's interesting.
It's weird. That's not what I thought.
I guess I don't understand how that's even technically possible. It's assuming that you were already getting 100% of the questions, that's crazy. It just seems crazy to me, but I completely believe you. I know that we recently restructured our navigation on the Wistia.com marketing site, and I've watched support drop, and it's because help is no longer, or support or whatever it was, no longer a prominent link on the homepage. And so we're like trying to think through that.
We were terrified. We really thought that the moment we make that switch, once we start putting the emphasis on making it as easy as possible to get in touch with us, that the numbers would just skyrocket. Like I didn't have nightmares, but I honestly thought I would come in and there would be, hundreds of people just waiting on us. And that, I'm sure it's a culmination of things. I'm sure it's part, we run 24/7 support, so we never have a big waiting queue, really. So any increase in load that we might have had, it was easily absorbed into the room that we had created for ourselves. It was weird. It was one of those, it did not happen like I expected, which was a pleasant surprise.
If you had a guess, Chase, what percentage of support tickets that Basecamp has do you think require more than a single email?
More than a single email. Tell you what, if you'll talk for just a second, I'll tell you exactly what my numbers were for today. So I'm just going to put it on you and you can just talk for a second.
Chase Livingston, can you give us like a little... like a beatbox or some sort of like Jeopardy music?
Unfortunately, no. I think that's your wheelhouse, Jeff.
I'm just interested because what I would recommend to people, honestly, is to look to bucket their support queue into like wholly controllable. I'm not sure how to describe these issues. Like wholly controllable and like requires a lot of research, because if most of the issues that you encounter are fairly straightforward, then I think there are a lot of really great platforms that you can provide help. Mm-hmm. I think if a lot of the tickets that you run into because of whatever's going on your platform require a good amount of back and forth and a good amount of research and time, then you need to know what channel works for that. Like, chat is great unless it takes more than a minute to figure out the answer to someone's question, in which case you're just creating like the worst experience. Even Twitter, if I have to wait for a while for a response, I'm like, what are these guys doing?
They're ignoring you. They saw your Twitter handle pop up and they're like, yeah, you can wait.
Which is smart. That's really great. That's what mailbox support is doing to me right now.
All right. So, all right. So on mine, as far as today goes, 60% of the cases that I touched were one email. So 40% of the ones required multiple emails back and forth.
And I don't have any conclusions to draw out of that number, but I think that that's important to take into account.
Yeah. And that's one of those two, again, customer bases are going to vary, right? So for instance, I was trying to think, there's a couple of companies I've worked with for the last couple of weeks that have had confusion about how they set up their accounts. So those have been multiple emails back and forth. That'll die out once they finally understand what they've done, which they're using Basecamp a little differently. So that'll drop off. But yeah, again, your traction, your mileage is going to vary because you get some people like Zapier who, they throw up a kick-ass help site and still make their contact info pretty, not prominent, but still easy to find. And they saw a massive dive in the number of tickets they were getting every day. So I think it just depends. Carolyn, back over to you. I had a question written down for you, and then Jeff got me sidetracked, and I don't know where I put it. So that happened. So we talked about, you know, making it easy as far as Twitter support, making it easy to get in touch with you as far as email support. Do you think that there's any time, kind of talking about what Jeff and I were just talking about as far as, you know, making it super easy to get in touch, can you ever set that barrier to entry too low, like to the point where, like, you're just – too overwhelmed with customer questions?
Yeah, I think you can maybe. I'm thinking of the experience that we had. So I'll just tell you a quick background of what we've seen in terms of opening and closing channels and trying to direct traffic through them. And so what we did a little less than a year ago maybe was we just compared the stats for email and Twitter. And we were getting way more emails than we were getting tweets. And the response time, the response time for Twitter was so much faster, partially because of the nature of the questions that come in on Twitter, partially because of just the fact that you have to use fewer words, so you use fewer words, both on the customer side and on the support person side. And so we made a big effort to direct more people to Twitter. And that mostly worked. There's still people who we get end up saying, okay, I need to write you like three paragraphs of instructions. I'm going to email you. Like, we still move from Twitter a fair amount, but we've increased the number of tweets we get consistently, and the number of emails that we've gotten has stayed pretty consistent for a bunch of months in a row. So that was a success, and the response time is still faster for Twitter. I think that worked really well, and it was a sort of an example of adding one channel and, you know, cannibalizing some of the support that was coming through a different channel. You know, just as simple as the drop-down menu for help, we just added to tweet at us. We did not have that same experience when we did live chat. So we tried live chat and made it sort of super in your face. You know, it was down there at the bottom. Sometimes it had a little like, hey, talk to me. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to with Twitter, where the person had already clicked on the help menu in order to, like, they had to sort of seek out the option to help us and for help in the first place. Whereas with live chat, it was just there. And we did get a bunch more people saying kind of like, hey, saw this button here, so I thought I would push it and say hi. Which, like, on a lot of levels, we love, and in some ways would really be thrilled to support that communication as well. But it seemed to draw a lot of attention, a lot more questions at all, and it did cannibalize a tiny bit, but not much, and yet, like, the total volume was going up so much because people were just kind of going like, oh yeah, like I wasn't motivated to reach out to you, but since this thing is here and you're talking, like, I may as well just make this comment, whether it's like an actual question, in which case it's succeeded at you know, helping people get the support that they need. But a lot of that, a lot of it wasn't. It was like, oh, I think it's super interesting what you're doing, and you know, I want a job, and like all this stuff. So, so we've kind of had both experiences where sometimes it really works well to sort of try and divert support through a different channel, and sometimes it doesn't. So yeah, I think the live chat one, the experience that we had was kind of making it. It's not that it's making it too easy. It's more, I mean, I guess it is that it's making it too easy. It's just that it was sort of prompting communication where communication wasn't otherwise necessarily necessary, I guess.
Yeah, that's one of those, it's always a double-edged sword. Because I was thinking, as you were kind of walking through live chat, there have been several times where I've been in a store before, and it's like, oh, gee, if I could find a certain product, then I would probably buy it, but I don't know where it is in the store. Do I really want to ask somebody? But if that person was standing right there, then I would probably go ahead and ask, and they might get another sale out of it. So it's just kind of that double-edged sword. So Wistia shut down phone support as they grew. Buffer experimented with live chat and then eventually kind of shifted away from that. Chase, is there, when it comes to automatic and Jetpack and that kind of thing, has there ever been something that, you know, a channel that you tried and then just decided to back off because there was just too much coming in?
Not that I recall. There hasn't been a ton of that. I mean, you know, we obviously get a lot of live chat volume and we aren't able to expand it as quickly to all of our products and all of our users as we would like to just because of the volume that we end up with. So I guess in a way that's kind of a similar situation, but honestly, for the most part, the interactions we have over live chat and that I've seen are all, you know, genuine, like, questions or you know, feedback that's useful. We get a little bit of the, you know, hey, I just wanted to chat, I saw this box here or whatever, but that hasn't been as big of a problem for us as it sounds like maybe it was for Buffer. So that I guess that's kind of the only aspect I would think about. As far as the other avenues, you know, email obviously is not the case there, and then even with Twitter, seems to be that you know, we only get what's necessary there. It hasn't been, you know, overwhelming or anything like that for us. And I guess those are the kind of the big ones that, you know, we've really focused on. Facebook hasn't been one that we've really focused on too much. So yeah, I think, you know, for us, at this point, all of the support mediums we've tried have gone pretty well.
All right, and just to kind of round out the show, it's the same kind of thing for all three of you, and we'll start with Jeff on this one. Jeff, you touched on it a little bit earlier as far as, you know, offering different, for lack of a better word, offering different barriers here between free versus paying customers. So is that something that companies that have that free versus paying distinction between their groups that should be looking at? You know, something like, well, I think MailChimp does this pretty well. So MailChimp, free plans, you're just, you're SOL. You've got the help site, and that's it. Whereas paying customers are able to access their support team. And they do a nice job of putting a banner up and saying, you know, you're on the free plan, so you don't, you know, you have these great resources. If you move to a paying plan, you get this. So is that something companies should be thinking about with free customers, just kind of making it, you know, making that barrier higher for them?
Definitely something you should be thinking about. And trying to make the connection between right? Because there's two sides to that argument. One is, so MailChimp has, I don't know, 150, 200 support folks. They have like, so that's like 120 people in the queue at once. And yet they can't turn on support for free customers. They would be completely overrun and they would need, you know, whatever, five times that maybe. So definitely you need to do the math between can you afford to support all those people, and also does an interaction with support folks lead to a paying customer? Like, is that something that you need to think through? And I mean, we didn't touch on it here, but maybe there are, I guess it's not channels, but it's like proactive versus reactive. So maybe you're using you know, in-app messaging, like an intercom or something like that, as a channel, but you're choosing when to create that conversation rather than just waiting for them to email in and then saying like, well, that's why we need to have this channel open and staffed appropriately, is because like every time they talk to us in live chat, they convert to a customer. So maybe you're turning that into a proactive thing instead. I mean, yeah, I think MailChimp is a really interesting case study because everyone loves them. Everyone loves the brand. Everyone really talks about it as this like fun, personable brand. And yet, you know, they used to, I don't know if they still do this, but you couldn't contact them without doing a search in their knowledge base. And then they just like shut off support to free users, and there wasn't a huge backlash. So it's like, you know, it's very similar to Buffer moving all their stuff to, or moving a lot of their stuff to Twitter. Well, when you're conversing with someone in Twitter, especially being that their handle takes up part of the 140 character limit, which is just ridiculous, but that's neither here nor there, you probably lose a lot of those personal touches that used to go into your emails, right? So it's like, it just challenges a lot of the things that we think are important about support. I think it's really interesting to think through.
Yeah, Chase Livingston, what do you think? Same one over to you. And I asked this because I was talking to a friend last week, and they were in a similar situation. They had launched a product. It was about 80-85% free customers versus 15% paying, and they were treating both of them the same. The barriers to interaction there were equal among those groups. So do you think, you know, looking at automatic scale, both customer-wise, free-wise, and team-wise, do you think it's smart to have different barriers there, depending on if you're free versus paid?
You know, I think it's an interesting question. If you have the staff to support it, I think it's great to be able to offer the same support to your free customers as to the paid customers. You know, with Jetpack, obviously there is no like paid Jetpack or anything like that. So we're just offering, you know, support to everybody who's using it because none of them really pay us, obviously. With WordPress.com, currently the main method of support for free users is our forums. Where we have a, you know, an entire team of happiness engineers that, you know, do their best to get in and answer forum threads as much as they can. Sometimes, obviously, they don't, you know, get to every single thread, but they do as much as they can. So we don't do, we don't offer email support through the contact form to our free users. But we do offer, like I said, the forums, and then new users that are, I think, less than 2 weeks old. Are offered live chat to try to, you know, help them get going and get them started with their account, you know, obviously in the hopes that they're going to become paid users if they have a good start with building their site right off the bat. So that's kind of how we do it. And then obviously, you know, our paying WordPress.com customers get, you know, email support, live chat, that kind of thing. So, you know, that's kind of how we structure it. I think at some point the hope is to be able to offer up everything to offer up all of our mediums to paying and free customers regardless, and maybe have, you know, different support teams focus on each group so that we can, you know, monitor and keep the response times for both as low as possible, obviously. And so that, you know, that's kind of the plan right now. But yeah, like I said, as of right now, free users are a little less able to get in touch with us on WordPress.com.
All right, Carolyn, take us home, because I remember distinctly one of the first conversations I had with you. You were like, hell no, every customer is treated the same at Buffer. Paying, free, whatever, business plan, just your regular paid plan, all of it was the exactly
awesome
the same.
Plan, Chase. You're looking the for, awesome plan. The word you were looking for is the awesome plan.
But yeah, all of them exactly the same. Don't make a distinction as far as paid goes. Is that still the plan going forward with Buffer? You had to think about that one for a second.
Yeah, I had to think about it because we have sort of gotten to the point. I think I mentioned this 2 weeks ago. So we're kind of at the point now where the different plans feel a little bit like different products, especially the business plan. And so we are starting to just make it a little bit, it's not any easier for the business, for anybody to contact us or not. They have the same exact options. Everybody has the same, you know, the same email address, the same Twitter handle, all of that. We do segment it a little bit on our end. And I think it is partially because business plan people pay a whole lot more. It is also that they are a slightly different product, so it just is starting to make sense for us to sort of have people specialize in the business plan. And certain people even prefer talking to customers like that. You know, some people really love talking to the little mom and pops that are like, I am new to Twitter and I'm learning this thing. Like, I'm excited, help me. And other people are really advanced and, you know, integrating with Google Analytics and whatever. And different people on our team, in fact, gravitate to the different customers. So there's several different reasons why that's the case. Philosophically, I think we have shifted a tiny bit, but not so much that they have a different option. I agree with Chase that she's like that.
Yeah, not Chase Clemens. Chase Lewis. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, well, yeah,
yes.
I agree with Clemens that if you have the staff for it, it's great to be able to offer it, offer the same experience for everybody. And that's our ultimate philosophy. That's not the case. We don't have enough staff at the moment to provide that really awesome experience for everybody. So we're having to make some sacrifices. On the Buffer end, the solution to that is try and build up the staff and continue to reach that and make sacrifices temporarily, not necessarily change our philosophy. I do think it's slightly tricky to try and say, like, people who do or don't interact with support upgrade or churn or whatever, because people who interact with support are already the ones who are having problems. So that's not necessarily comparing apples to apples. But in general, we don't necessarily care if people upgrade at a higher rate because they've talked to us. More just a blessing
that we
want to have.
It's
great. We want to be
available to them. Awesome. Cool. So that's where we'll leave it. Let us know what your team does as far as the easy channels. And when I say easy, I mean literally like how easy is it to contact you via email? And do you have a phone number and Twitter support and all that kind of fun stuff? Let us know what you do. And let us know what you think about, you know, how easy, how low those barriers should be. How low can you go on those? Yeah, hit us up, supportops.co/contact, or on Twitter. We're at supportops there. Cool. So, wait, did I miss something? Jeff was just like, I heard something from that corner.
Sorry. How low can you go? Just a really funny phrase out of Chase Klein's mouth.
I will tell you that as soon as for everybody else outside the show, I usually send out like show notes and things like that to this group, usually on the weekends. And as soon as I kind of got hooked on the lower the barrier to interaction phrase, I promised myself I would work in how low can you go somehow. So there it is. That's why it showed up there. All right, so that brings us to my favorite part of each and every week with this crew. It's this week's shout outs. These are the things that are making us happy, so happy you want to shout them out from the rooftops and let you know you should be doing, buying, reading, sharing, whatever it is. Cool. So I will say props to Jeff and Carolyn on that, because that was pretty realistic. I didn't know if that was the audio button being pressed or what was going on. High tech there. Oh, so, all right, Jeff, what's your shout out?
Well, this week I am shouting out the Blue Apron design team. We've been using Blue Apron for probably 6 weeks or so, and I feel like I already shouted out the service. But then I happened to be the one who was opening the box that they send you last week, and every flap of the box and every piece of whatever material that they send that comes along with the box has been thought through and has some sort of message related to what they do. And I think that that is really inspiring to me. I almost wish we had a box that we sent people, or like I'm thinking to myself, I wish that we had a box that we send people so we could put messaging on it. And then I was like, we send boxes all the time, right? We send emails, we have login screens, all of these things. So it's just a reminder that that micro copy is super important, and I thought that they did a great job. So if I had a hat, I would take it off.
No, we send boxes all the time. That's some deep thinking for this part of the show.
Yep. You know, I'm just now coming online, Chase. I'm just waking up now.
Oh, all right. Chase Livingston, what do you got for us this week?
I'm not sure if I've ever shouted out if this then that before, but if I have, awesome. They just came out with a new little, I think it's an app / service kind of thing called the Do button. And so it's like you can hook up but some of their services to this, like it's called the Do button. And so you can create like custom buttons to do certain actions. And so what I've done is the app lets you place a widget in your like today view thing when you swipe down on your iPhone, and it has your like custom buttons in there. And so I've created a couple. I have some like Wemo lights and switches and things like that in my house. So, you know, you can just swipe down and then press that button and control the lights in your house, like turn them on and off just by pressing the button. So I don't have to go find the Wemo app and open it up. It even works when your phone's locked. I don't know how secure that is. I guess if somebody stole my phone, they could like turn my lights on and off constantly if they wanted to, but whatever. But yeah, it's a pretty neat little app, and I've just been playing around with it, but it seems like there's some pretty cool stuff you can do with it. So I've kind of gotten into the whole home automation thing lately, and so yeah, you should check it out if you're interested in that kind of thing.
See, the next time we meet up now, I'm going to steal your phone.
Exactly. I'm not going to spend the next like month trying to figure out how I can turn off all of Livingston's lights. In the show.
It's going to be a very elaborate heist, like Mission Impossible kind of elaborate.
Exactly. And the end result is going to be turning off a bedroom light.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then Chase Livingston's wife will look up and be like, why is my light off? And it'll be worth it.
Very funny. Yeah, that's true. She probably would.
Oh, all right, Carolyn, what do you got?
Okay, I have two. The first one is more just recycling yours. I wanted to thank you for the shout out to read Station 11. I read it on vacation, and not only was it a very entertaining book, and had absolutely nothing to do with work, which was especially fun to read on vacation. But I had the really fun experience of finishing a book and clicking to the acknowledgments and seeing my sister's name there, which is my sister works in publishing and she's a senior editor. And normally I know when I'm reading a book that she has worked on, but this one I did not know. And so that was super fun. Basically, if you're ever reading a freaking awesome book, her name's probably in the action. But anyway, so I wanted to say a good shout out from a couple weeks back. And my real one, this is a kind of a random thing, but I don't know if you guys use Snapchat at all, but Snapchat has started putting like icons next to people who you interact with. And so you can now see if like the person who you're Snapchatting with, or I don't know if there's a cool word for that, like you're snapping with or whatever. But so you can now see like if they're your number one person, or if you're both each other's number one person, or if you're theirs but they're not yours, or it's this really interesting social experiment, I think. And the shout out for that isn't because I think that's a good idea, because I don't think that's a good idea. it's because I think that's such an interesting experiment, and I think it's cool that they do things that are a bit different. And so if I was in a meeting and they were discussing that, I would be like, absolutely not. This is a terrible idea. Why would you want people to know that that person who they send the most snaps to, they're not their recipient's favorite person? Like, I would have just thought that this was a terrible idea. And I'm sure there were people at the company who felt that way, and yet they experiment with these like crazy things that piss people off, which I think is an awesome thing. In some ways, they are not afraid to try stuff, which I think is cool.
So, I love the fact that you're not a fan of it, but the idea behind it, as far as the experiment, two thumbs up.
Yeah.
All right, my shout out this week is actually an app that I downloaded last week. I was over at my grandmother's farm, and it was really beautiful outside at night. No real light pollution or anything like that. And I was looking around, I was like, wow, this is great. There's like, okay, so I know Orion's Belt, and that's the only thing I knew looking around. So I downloaded an app called Skyview. It was like $2, something like that. But it's really awesome because it uses your camera. You hold it up, and it tells you what you're looking at, what planet you're looking at, what constellation you're looking at, gives you background on it. Just really cool. Probably not useful at all if you're in a city like San Francisco. But everywhere else where there's darkness at night, it works out pretty well. I was pleasantly surprised at it. And for $2, I mean, that was a no-brainer. It was worth trying. So we'll have that and all the other shout-outs and show notes and all that fun stuff up shortly, supportops.co. Programming note, we are off next weekend. I've got to go to Auburn to see my brother-in-law graduate, and there's just no way I can be back in time, so that's what it is. I guess I should give him a shout-out. So, Colin, if you ever listen to the show, congratulations on making it through college. I honestly was scared there for a minute, so you made it. Congratulations. Oh, it's okay. We joke about that all the time, so... Yeah. Oh, so we'll be off next Monday. We'll be back the following Monday, same bat time, same bat channel. Until we see you then, have an awesome week.